The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory, glory, glory. Oh.
Formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walked through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground. The camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh,
good morning, welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. It's Friday, hallelujah, we made it. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for letting me join you. I don't know what you people do at 11 o'clock, but whatever it is you do, I'm happy that you do that, do with me. All right. And so I got to get some house cleaning out of the way right quick. I've got a really good guest in studio, so I want to give him as much time as possible. I don't know how I kept missing it, but let me please now lay prostrate before the people of St. Vincent and the Grenadines and say to them, man, I couldn't imagine. Like, I don't know what I would do if molten lava was sliding towards my house. I don't know what kind of mental state I would be in. And I know we've had our own catastrophe in Dorian, right? But the thing about hurricanes is they come and they kind of go, right? But to have the belly of the earth decide to, vomit itself on you, there's really no way around that. And so you see people that are being evacuated and everything is just, so much uncertainty in the atmosphere right now. And so I know that we do have some people here that live in the Bahamas that are from St. Vincent and the Grenadines. And even to my Bayesian friends, the people from Barbados, who are, as a consequence, dealing with the smog of the volcano in St. Vincent. You all are in my prayers, man. I mean, the only time I can actually recall this happening was that when I was a 10th grade student, I think Montserrat went through the same thing. And the entire population had to kind of disperse, and people had to literally build their lives back from scratch. And unless you're a millionaire, most human beings are only going to build a house once in their life. And if you've already done that, to sit there and watch it completely go to imagine mentally in itself is more than most human beings can bear. So I wanted to get that out of the way because I don't know how I kept missing that. And then, of course, tomorrow is Saturday. Bishop Hall is going to do his thing tomorrow. He turned 74 the other day, and for his 74th birthday, he wants to go into the inner city, somewhere in inner city Nassau, and he wants to give out 74 packages of food supplies and clothes supplies to the people that are in need. Today is definitely the last day, so for those of you that have been holding out, please, please, it is my earnest, fervent prayer that you go and see the bishop today. Go to the New Covenant Baptist Church today and take with you your gently worn clothing. Take with you your canned goods. I know many people still have things that they had from Dorian and they didn't get to give because they wanted to wait until all of the aided stuff had gone. And then some of you, we've been living through the pandemic. Some of you are 30 pounds heavier than we were pre-March 2020. And so that dress, that don't fit. Take that down. Take that down. Put it in the box, take it to the bishop, all right? Because he wants to do something good for the poor. And, if you lend to the poor, you lend to the Lord, all right? And I have a friend. She has a birthday. It's tomorrow. So April Moultrie, wherever you are. I don't really like cake, but I come in for cake anyhow. And make sure only 19 people there because I could be number 20. And the prime minister say 20 people at a time. All right? So I'm going to come for my cake tomorrow, April Moultrie, wherever you are. She has a case of what I call the Benjamin Button. She's the only person that I know that continues to get younger every time I see her. And lastly on my list, and this is not really housekeeping, but this is something that peeved me, right? You know, we can continue to say that the people in our society are not getting things right. But if the agencies of our society do not get little things right, then what do we expect from the people in the society? I had the good fortune every morning, I take my commute to the studio. And we all know that His Royal Highness, whether you agree with him or not, Philip has gone on to eternity, right? As a consequence, flags are to be flown half-mast. Well, I passed three police stations this morning, and can I tell you, and I'm willing to bet that the one that I saw in the south also had a different thing, but I just can't recall it. So let me give you the ones that I can recall. I passed the police station at the Grove Police Station. So if you're listening to me, please go outside and rectify it now. At no time should any flag in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas be flown higher than that of the national flag. Therefore, Superintendent of Police in charge of the Grove Station, if the jack is being flown at half mast, then the police insignia ought to also be flown at half mast. And that's not the case. I see the people over at Nassau Street are getting it right. I pass there and I see the people over at the Fort Charlotte Police Station are flying no flag. So I'm not really sure what is the uniform standard, but these things peeve me, the Commissioner of Police, if you're listening, the aides of the Commissioner of Police, if you're listening, whoever the divisional superintendent is responsible for stations, if you're listening, Solomon Cash, my good friend, Commissioner of Crime, if you're listening, let's make sure we get the standard right. Because if we don't get little things right, you know, if you continue to let little things in the community slip, if you continue to let the officer get away without having his belt or his baton or his buttons in place, it drips and drips and drips and drips. And I have this saying, this is a Levin Miller quote, the dripping tap breaks the rock as well, right? And yeah, so you can write that down. It's mine. You can use it whenever you feel like. But we have an obligation, particularly the men and women in the uniform. We have an obligation. We're paid by the state to obligate ourselves to hold the line, to maintain the standard, to be the standard, to be the beacon on the hill. That is our job. That is what we do. There is a reason we do it. It is institutionalized, and we must do it with all of our might. So the people over there at the Grove Station, please, for Christ's sake, not for my sake, for Christ's sake, over there at the Nassau Street Station, whoever is in charge over there. All right, okay, so yesterday, I'm sure, unless you live under a rock, you must have heard of possibly the largest shooting incident in this country since the Fox Hill incident, if my memory serves me correctly. I will tell you, though, much to my chagrin, one of the things yesterday that bothered me was the precision. The precision bothers me. I go back in my mind and I think about the shooting at Fox Hill, and that looks like an uncalculated, harum scarum, all-out attack. It actually looks like a massacre, right? It looks like uncalculated, careless firing of a firearm. That is what Fox Hill looked like to me in my mind. Yesterday was something special. I mean, here we have a four-way intersection. I'm thinking to myself that if you go west, you go into Palmdale. No one wants to do that because you're bound to be caught in the traffic. If you run north, you run into a lot of dead end areas. And unless you're very versed in how to maneuver through that area, you don't want to take that option. Wolf Road has the police station, so you don't want to go directly south. That only leaves you with one direction to go east. And the people were able to get away, which means they planned the escape and they planned to go east. All right? And we talk about an intersection. I'll tell you why that one bothers me so much, because it is it is with regularity that I consider that the most convenient shortcut on this island. Jerome Avenue is the best shortcut on this island when you're traveling either east to west or north to south. If you're able to get to Jerome Avenue, most times that area there has no traffic, all right? Now, for whatever the reason was, the vehicle itself took that route. For whatever caused that to happen, I found it to be very calculated. And the reason I am concerned as a trained person with a trained mind, because war is an art. Killing is an art. The military exists for the purpose of killing men. This is what they taught us. And you must become skillful at it, and you ought to be able to do it effectively without hurting people around you. What I saw yesterday looked to me like Killology 101. And so now I'm concerned, because I know the Commissioner of Police, the Commander of Defense Force, they have at their resource the ability to train men to kill. And with the level of precision I saw, one target, completely isolated, without the ability to return fire. That sounds like killology to me. Who then? Who is training our sons to be this effective at murder? There are, and I'm picturing it in my mind. There are 1, 2, 3 buildings that flank that corner, and the open bush that the car ran into. All right, but if we're talking about a high-powered rifle, they call everything around here an AK-47. But if we're talking a high-powered rifle, we're talking about a weapon with the effective shooting range of minimum 1,800 meters. All right, or thereabout. Which means that no building on that corner, including the one beyond the bush, is out of the range of a high-powered weapon. Yet not a single other person was shot. Not a single other person killed. Everyone harmed by this attack is solely isolated in this one area. That sounds like killology to me. And so if I were commissioner of police today, I could tell you that I would literally be sitting and wondering to myself, who has the resource? Who has the range? Because weapon isn't something that you just naturally have the ability to do. You have to train your mind. You have to be able to train your muscle. You have to be able to train your body to respond. You have to learn the marksmanship principles. You have to learn to apply marksmanship principles, right? Things like the foresight, rare sight, must align with the target and the eye. Things like you must be able to fire your weapon without any undue physical effort. Things like you must be able to fire and follow through without altering the position of the weapon. You need to learn these things. They are a part of killology. Because soldiers kill men. That is what they do. Then where are they learning it? Because all of what the United States Army is, all of what the Russian army is, all of what the Cuban army is, all of what every single army on this planet is, are resource pools to train people to effectively carry out operations, missions that kill people. And this is the second time now that I've witnessed foot operations, right? Because that's what they are. The men got out, they got on foot, they're able to operate, get back into the vehicle, and leave the site undetected without anyone returning fire. That is an effective ambush. There is a fire party, there is a cover party, and while one person is opening fire on the car, there's another guy standing up making sure no one can shoot. That is killology, man. That is what that is. Who has the resource to train our boys like this? Where are they firing these guns? Because this island is only 21x7, right? And if they open the police range now, I assure you, if the wind fall flat enough, you could hear the police range go hot from here, where we are. When they open the range at Coral Harbor, you're able to hear Coral Harbor weapons go off all the way on Cable Beach if the wind is flat enough. So where are they practicing firing high-powered weapons that no one can hear them or detect? Anyway, the more important question is, what is fueling that? Mm-hmm. Because to fuel that, you would need to be able to fund it. And if you know anything about national defense, you know that national defense eats up the lion's share of most countries' budgets, whether it is America or Russia or Germany. National defense, the training of soldiers, eats up the lion's share of most budgets. Then what is the funding source for this level of killology I witnessed yesterday, or saw yesterday, because I didn't see the scene, but I saw the outcome. Well, Finn Thompson is my guest this morning. Good morning, Finn.
Good morning, Levon. Good morning, Bahama Land. First, let me say thank you for the opportunity to come and chat with you today. Listen, first and foremost, let me say that the very introduction that you laid, that mm-hmm. you've laid, is the foundation upon which I think I can come and make my make a presentation.
Mm-hmm.
It costs money.
Right.
First thing. If we accept, there's some constants. Well, first, before I begin, let me extend my condolences to both those who were mm-hmm. injured mm-hmm. and those who died, their families, mm-hmm. This morning. Because this type of conversation can very sometimes be difficult.
And I want to share you. Yeah. I want to share yeah, with
I want,
you.
I want to say that. I want to make sure that's clear, that people don't understand. This is not about setting people up to impugn anybody's character.
Uh-huh.
Save and except to say this. There is a trend in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas that started somewhere in the late 1980s, and it's been moving from that time. Each year from about 1989, the numbers of homicides per year have gradually gone up.
Mm-hmm.
It's on an incline. Nowadays, mm-hmm. it's on a steep incline. There's some days, some years when we're up, and then some years when we're down. One of the reasons why I've actually taken an interest in this over the years, and there's a group that we formed, Coalition of the Citizens Against Prohibition,
mm-hmm.
was because we recognize that the drug economy does have a funder. But we have to accept that not only, for example, financial services and tourism is a big part of the economy, mm-hmm. but the economy is also fueled by the underground economy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the biggest so-called payers of our people and purveyors of violence in this country.
Okay.
You just said something which was absolutely powerful. Who's funding this?
Right.
It has to be someone who's organized.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be someone who has the wherewithal to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be someone who's protecting a perceived business.
An asset, an
interest. Mm-hmm. It could very well be an illegal business,
mm-hmm.
but more likely than not, and it is an illegal business. What have four commissioners of police, national security ministers over the last four administrations have said? What have they said? That 60% of the crime which is fueled in this country, 60 to 70%, is drug related.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from that particular culture, which is the narco economy.
Right.
Bahamians don't like to say it,
right.
But it's the narco economy, which the Bahamas was in the 80s and the 90s, and to some extent, we're still suffering that. What happened yesterday was the chickens coming home, and I say this kindly because we know that we have people who are mourning today.
Mm-hmm.
The chickens coming home to roost. This is not the first time this has happened. It happened in Fox Hill on June 19th, 2019. It happened in Fox Hill, but it did not happen with the precision
mm-hmm.
that this happened yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But there are clear patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm correct, and I want the public to understand, I don't pretend to be God. If we are correct, and if our analysis is correct, that this is coming fundamentally from a well-funded, well-organized culture or drug culture or narco economy or persons thereabouts, then we know what the problems are. The question is, what do we do about it in terms of answering the challenge which yesterday now presents? Today, I only saw one article at the Tribune and the Guardian about this particular event.
Mm-hmm.
It should be awash in all of the pages of the newspapers mm-hmm. because it clearly shows that the funder of that event, and you're absolutely right, and you're the military man. It was great to even highlight the introduction you gave. The funder of that event gave clear instructions, with clear targets,
mm-hmm.
and he executed to a fault,
mm-hmm.
save and except for the young woman and the young man who's now, we understand me now, I have to make it clear,
right.
that even the young men in the car, all of them may not have been involved in a particular business.
Mm-hmm.
One or more of them may have been family members
mm-hmm.
who just happened to be in the wrong vehicle at the wrong time.
Yeah.
So I'm suggesting to you that this is fundamentally about the narco economy coming home to roost.
But
the culture of violence is part and parcel of it.
I heard you refer to the 80s, and here's the difficulty I have, right? I don't think the narco economy is what it was in the 80s. Like, you remember seeing the wealth of the drug trade in the 80s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you grew up through the 90s, there was no shadow about what was the benefit of the drug economy. Mm-hmm. Today, it's not as well seen. You don't see the flashy cars. I remember when neighbors of mine would write off the GT boss, mid-90s, and before the end of the day, they would have another one. And so we saw the value of the drug economy. We no longer see that today. Plus, during the 80s, the culture of the drug economy, and interestingly enough, the commissioner of police himself has admitted it the other day on TV. He said, the criminals once had a code of ethics that they themselves no longer live by.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to a young man on Facebook this morning. I think his name is Kenny Johnson, a gang person that has now moved out of the country and is trying to get his life together.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, you know, when we was coming up, the rule was no women, no children. Mm-hmm. If no matter what you do to me, when I pull up, if your child, our child, any child was in the general area, you live to see another day.
I suspect because you're saying that,
mm-hmm.
that is the reason why we may perhaps have two survivors.
But
it was done badly.
Yeah.
It was done badly.
Yeah.
So I suggest you that all the markers of a hit,
mm-hmm.
an assassination,
mm-hmm.
are there. What does that tell us? That tells us that we are still we're still steeped in the drug economy, mm-hmm. the drug culture, or the results of that business, that illicit business, and we are having these things flare up from time to time. Why is it flared up now? It may be very interesting to note that I think that the only way to understand when these events happen is to use what I would call a business analysis of it.
Mm.
It's a business.
Mm-hmm.
There is competition in that business.
the rules which you ought to comply with in that business. You violate the rules or you violate the level of respect, you cross the line, there are consequences. Mm-hmm. This goes back into our relationships over the years, 5, 10, maybe 15 years. This is nothing new. What happened yesterday was not the beginning of something
this has been going on now
for 30 years in the Bahamas. Once we got involved in a drug war for which the maximum, the zero-sum total, was destruction, and it cannot be won. It is an unpoliceable business. The illicit business in drugs is unpoliceable. Not that I don't think that the Royal Bahamas Police Force have done their damnedest to try to strike out. It cannot happen because that it is designed to compromise the police force. It is designed to compromise the efforts of criminal justice in terms of reform. The very consumption of drugs, notwithstanding whether we like it or not, it introduces for people almost like a bad option. There's only one way to make a living in this business. And for those young men who take the chance of doing it, it's a lucrative enterprise. Mm-hmm. Whether we like it or not, it's a lucrative, it pays well.
But I'm saying to you now, though, Fane, it seems to be far less luxurious now and a whole lot more murderous than it was in let's just say, the 80s or the 90s.
Could be later on that our younger brothers have learned how to be more circumspect in their business and in their work. I suspect so. Mm. I don't think it's gone anywhere. Mm. I think you're right, that the fact that in the 1980s we were the so-called 70% distribution point of cocaine and other drugs into the United States, and that's not the case today. Mm-hmm. But to that extent, that we still have the role of being a purveyor of this activity, and we also have a local economy. It is a business. The police speak to it all the time. Mm-hmm. There was a recent recent report, I think, which indicated and called the gangs by their names, that they are organized, highly structured, and very disciplined. Mm-hmm. They operate like a business. Mm-hmm. And this is where we have to drop the moralizing of this particular question. It's a business at that level of society. We must deal with these young men as if it is a business. Understand that it's a criminal enterprise, yes, mm-hmm. but it's a business. How do you deal with businesses if you want to bring them to the mainstream? What did the Americans do in the 1930s? They ended prohibition. Mm-hmm. They brought the use and consumption of alcohol into the mainstream.
Right.
They regulated it. They controlled it. They taxed it. The violence stopped overnight. Mm. What happened in Portugal in 2001? The same problem. High levels of crime, high levels of violence. What did they do about it? They legalized it. They brought the business of this illicit enterprise into the mainstream.
So you're saying to me, Finn, that legalization will dry up the blood. I think most things have a trickle effect, right? And so even if we legalize it, there will still be people that choose to operate in a market that is not in keeping with economic ecosystem of the Bahamas. There will still be people that will still want to be able to either sell their product that is not regulated by whatever regulating body we use.
Yes.
And so will it dry all the blood up off the ground? I don't think so.
Well, the science is out. This is a great question, Livon. The science is out. My studies, my review, and of course, you and I have had these conversations over the years. What we have seen is that there are certain countries that give us examples and draw lessons. In Portugal, they had to make a hard decision. The levels of crime, the levels of infection as a result of illicit drug use were too high. Mm-hmm. It was killing and crippling Portugal. Mm-hmm. They made a tough decision. 60 to 70% drop in violence and the illicit and the health issues overnight. This is not something which there's no perfect system. Mm-hmm. But overnight, this is what happened. In the United States in the 1930s, let's go back that far. Overnight, when they recognize this, and this thing about prohibition does not make any sense. Legalize it, supervise it, overnight. Violence stopped.
And the people that...
Overnight, live on.
The people that say, Fane, that you are opening the floodgates. First, you give them this. Tomorrow, they will want that. The day after that, God knows what they will want. What do you say to those people?
Again, I don't moralize the conversation, but I can say this, that the human experience on this earth, there's nothing new about what I'm talking about. The science is in. Mm-hmm. We know what works and we know what does not work. I'm not suggesting that you have young people aged 10, 15, and this is unfortunate that I even get this kind of question. I'm not suggesting that we are irresponsible. Mm-hmm. I'm suggesting that the standard that we use with policing alcohol, the standard that we use with policing those drugs, controlled substances, right. It's the same standard we use to deal with this. And it's late coming to this conversation because, you know, the Attorney General said a few months back that until the American government at the federal level legalizes, he's not minded to support the idea. I'm suggesting to Mr. Bethel today, the cat is out the bag. It's too late. Our boys are destroying each other, killing each other, essentially for dominance in an unfair to put the police in the line of fire to stop a crossfire. And the police will not have any impact, save and except the limitations in our democracy, the intrusions into our civil liberties by search and seizures. Unfortunately, the police coming into contact with young men, unfortunately, events taking place when young men do not know how to react to police officers and their inquiries. There were ways of dealing with this other than through policing and making the matter worse. The drug war is a war started by ourselves, against ourselves. It makes no sense. We've copied it from the Americans. The Americans have seen a disaster. We are now experiencing the same disaster. We had a Chicago-style gangland slaying yesterday, last night that country you live on, Chicago-style. And it was done, but for the imprecision of the innocents, it was done with almost beautiful precision. Mm-hmm. That should be the indicator, Mr. Bethel, that you are wrong. But it's now time to look back and say, look, now, what can we do to empower our police not to be put into the line of crossfire to police the unpoliceable? The drug war is about the illicit consumption, sale, and movement of drugs in the Bahamas, in and through the Bahamas. How have other countries dealt with it? Again, the science is in. I'm not talking about anything which is new. I come to this table today because, first, I thank you for being here. But secondly, because I think the voice has to be said that this is a madness, an ignorance to continue pretending as if that drug court makes any sense. I'm a former magistrate. That drug court makes no sense. None.
So what do you say then, Finn, to people who say, or to people like the commissioner that will say, you say it is the unpoliceable, yet every year we improve our numbers. Every year we take more guns off of the street. For the last 3 years, we've been able to keep our numbers beneath 100. We've been able to ensure that the our capture of the illicit product. There was a time when the police had this streak where they hit where all they were getting was the substance and no one arrested. But now we're able to get the substance and we're able to take that. Almost on every occasion now the police makes a drug arrest, we have bodies attached to the drugs.
I've been watching that so-called...
So we've had our success.
Of course the police have had their success. 70% interdiction rate in many, many cases. But that's only scratching the surface, because the culture, which is really the Bahamas, is built over the last 30 to 40 years on a drug culture. Mm-hmm. We don't like to talk about it, but the narco economy that is the Commonwealth of the Bahamas is real. It sustains many lives and it sustains many people. Now, at the level, of course, that statement is made from, I have to agree with you. And the Royal Bahamas Police Force is the best possible institution to maintain the rule of law in this country. Mm-hmm. I'm suggesting, though, that it is impossible in this particular area of civil interdiction in this country and criminal interdiction in this country that we should continue down the law and order path of trying to police the unpoliceable.
You know where I sit on the issue, Faye.
Yeah.
And I have not ever supported the legalization of marijuana. I say that publicly.
That's true.
I don't know.
You've been very consistent.
Yeah. But it is because I've seen what the law does, and I don't understand why. Why have we not simply used the triggers in the law that already exist? Now, I know you always call for a carte blanche legalization. And to my mind, you know, I am not for the writing or rewriting of law if, in fact, we can't get the law that already exists to make sense. And you know the law says that technically the Minister of Health can grant anyone he desires. Anybody, the law doesn't put any preclusions in there for him. Then technically the substance is already not illegal. It is simply unlawful to possess it. And so we can simply, in a way, figure out a way to make it lawfully possessable, and then that way the government gets its taxes and revenues out of it. And if we did, be now able to put in regulations that would reduce the powers that the underground narco economy have. And we haven't been able to master that. So when I consider the opioid crisis in America, a crisis visited upon America by America, all right, whether it was to treat people that came from war or to treat chronic illnesses, the fact of the matter is they bred their own drug addicts. We run the risk in full legality of causing gateway drugs to be able to fall into the hands of so many people, and we don't know what the consequence of that will be. And that has always been one of the things that has been my hang-up. And so let the people that want to use it, use it. Let us regulate how they possess it. And let us have that. But for me, I have never, ever called carte blanche for the full legalization of marijuana.
Well, I take your point. And
I take it, but first and foremost, I think you mentioned an important word, gateway drugs, or the gateway experience. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the whole question of whether or not my position is carte blanche. First, let me say that I believe a phased legalization of drugs in this country is almost an essential for the survival of this little democracy. Mm-hmm. First, we've embraced an American system of criminal interdiction, which is clearly not working, and the violence is not being stemmed. How do we do this? Really, really depends upon the willingness of policymakers to act. On the street, this conversation is not really appreciated, save and except people know that that fellow making a hussy, making a couple of dollars, why don't leave him alone, blah, 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 blah. We live in a society, unfortunately, where the parasites of the society will only legalize this particular business at the level of the so-called private sector and their friends.
Correct. And they will consume the market.
I am suggesting a Uruguay model. I am suggesting a Portuguese model. You see, I come here prepared, Livon, because I know I was for your position. The Portuguese model is clear, that the state ought to intervene in this particular matter to deal with this if we decide to go in this. Our policymakers have to recognize the strength, to find the strength to do this. Mm-hmm. And this is not new. Again, legalization, I understand, when Colorado now has gone to the point where all drugs have been legalized. Mm-hmm. Recreational drugs have been legalized in certain quantities. I'm not suggesting lawlessness. I'm suggesting a phased, responsible revision of a law which is clearly doing more damage in its present condition as opposed to more good. Mm-hmm. Now, you said something which was interesting, so you and I agree. That you're saying it's not that possession is illegal, it's just that it's not permitted under the Health Act.
Correct.
Fine. I say expand the scope of permissible activity without having to go the route of so-called amending the Dangerous Drugs
Act. And that has always been my position. We simply reclassify the law.
But this is the problem, you see. We are now subject to two international treaties, which almost oblige us to honor a stupid, hackneyed system which was imposed upon us by virtue of our relationship with the Americans and the so-called OBAT, Operation BAT. You're familiar with that relationship that we have with the Americans. We have to look seriously at our international relations and our commitments and determine to the our American brothers, look, we have to go in this direction. To maintain peace in our streets, Levon, that's how serious it is. But we have to go in this direction because these massacres will continue because we cannot control the illicit business.
Again, and this is the third time I've said it this week, one of the basic principles or tenets of economics I learned from His Lordship Sir Michael Barnett, there ain't no such thing as a free lunch, right? Mm-hmm. And so you say to me that we must now turn to the Americans and say to them, listen, the blood is on my streets. But we endure our friendship with them, right? Mm-hmm. And when you consider the cost, and I'm telling you, one life is one life too many, right?
Absolutely.
But when you consider the value of the friendship that we endure, all right, it's called the enduring friendship, right? Mm-hmm. When you consider the value of that, is the Bahamas government in a position where they can say that, listen, regardless of what the federal government in America does, as the AG has suggested, regardless of what America's position will be, although they have given, I think it's now 39 of their states, the ability to marijuana, we as a country must take a stand. Can we trade off the value of enduring the friendship of America for that position? I don't know if the value, because we have a very tangible, the friendship we endure with America has tangible benefits. Mm-hmm. You see the boats, you see the planes, you see the drones, you see the airport restructurings, you see them spending, what is it, almost $200 million on an embassy. And so you can touch and feel the benefit of enduring an American friendship. Mm-hmm. Is then your position, Fane Thompson, that we can trade that enduring friendship off or some of the facets of that enduring friendship to take a position that is bull-nosed and say, we don't care what's happening federally. This is my country's stand, and we're not moving from that.
Well, it's clear that many of America's friends across to the Caribbean and including Jamaica, as we speak,
do they enjoy the same friendship?
I think what's important is does this policy initiative work? Yeah. What's the position taken by our American brothers? There's been no indication. I don't think even by implication that they would oppose any movement in that direction. You know what I think the problem is? We have constructed so much of what I would call a drug interdiction complex, military complex, that we now find ourselves stuck. For example, you mentioned the drones. They initially came for reasons of drug interdiction. The so-called boats, they also came by virtue of the need for drug interdiction. And perhaps even the planes, all of that. That relationship that we have built since the 1980s, and all these events have taken place against the background of enhancing the so-called relationship by way of drug interdiction. Mm-hmm. But clearly it has not worked.
So we have to make the decision to say to our brothers and sisters in the United States, listen, we have to go into a new direction. Our streets, our civil liberties are being threatened by virtue of the need to police the unpoliceable. Mm-hmm. You have to say that to them. Mm-hmm. And you say, listen, Mr. Secretary of State or Mr. Secretary of State, Mr. President Biden, we will take these initiatives and we do so with your support. Mm-hmm. And the answer can only be no. It cannot be yes. In fact, I think something as progressive as that may invite them to say, listen, you do what you must. Of course, bear in mind our relationship, and our relationship is important. And of course, so says, so done. Nothing is more fundamental to the Bahamas than the relationship it has with the U.S. government.
Right.
But the U.S. government is not stupid. The U.S. government understands the plea. Our streets are being devastated because of the interdiction, the need to interdict the drug war which is going on, which we inherited from you, which we embraced from you for reasons of so-called trying to end the war. We have made that's the science is in, everyone. The science is in. The Americans accept it. That's why now almost every state in America has decided to go in a different direction. The science is in.
Finn, let's open the line. 323-623-2354-316-325-4259. You can call me on any one of those numbers. You can text me on 422-4796. I dug up some of my old, you know, I used to be a soldier. Yeah,
Defense Force.
They trained me
you
for
are
war,
a trained,
right?
You were a trained soldier, yes.
And so I dug up some of my old notes, right? And because... Again, when I consider what it takes, right, and I've lived separate facets of life, so I calculate things differently. When I consider the manpower hours, when I consider the amount of times we had to go and check out the site, sending in active intelligence to be able to inform us of where we need to put our assets. When I consider what an operation like yesterday took. Who pays the people? Who pays the guy that's going to circle this block for the whole week to tell me the red light that stays on the northern side?
Right.
And
shadow them.
Yes, and who is, because you're going to also need more than one lookout vehicle.
Yes,
because
yes.
We need to know which way they take. If that's they go left, that's I need another flank route of people.
That's right.
If they go right, I need another flank that's route right. of people. And you consider the amount of assets that takes.
Mm-hmm.
Someone has to fund that. That doesn't come overnight. Mm-hmm. That isn't something that you could. It isn't ad hoc, right? It takes funding
mm-hmm.
and structure.
Mm-hmm.
And when I calculate, knowing what I know about ambushes, what ambushes mean, and how they are pulled off, that scares me more than anything. That scared me yesterday. I mean, people die. I'm not as affixed to the emotions of death as many people are. I apologize. People die. We will all die. How you die, the universe will decide that. But it wasn't the death that bothered me. It was the fact that I walk around with people that I may not know, because I know the ones that are trained, I know. I don't know these untrained killers, or I don't know these set of killers that are obviously getting a level of training that is superior to young violence.
Mm-hmm.
And that bothers me living on an island 21 miles long.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's take a phone call. Good morning, caller. You're on. Caller, you there? Caller, you there? Not there. Let me read the text message for you. It says, this one says, good morning, Levin and Guest. Good morning, Levin and Guest. Plan and by design, I believe that such killings are being carried out. There are those among us with the skill, intellect, who don't believe this, though. Some folks are quick to label others as conspiracy theorists. We'll just let them go on believing that conspiracy theorists are insignificant. In fact, all theory is vital to help solve such cases. Another text writer here says, Fiane Thompson, good morning. The problems exist due to the following poor parenting practices, police commissioners that are appointed by prime ministers, the inadequacy of the church, the decline of youth organizations such as the Boys Brigades, Royal Ambassadors, Pathfinders, and Girls Guides, which all have been replaced by gangs. Another text writer here says, please speak more into the mic. I'm working on that. If I went any closer, I might eat it. Morning, do we have to always wait on America before we do anything? Levin, those drugs are made in labs to do exactly what they do. This one here says, Mr. Miller, there's too much talking and no action. We are a reactionary country. Nobody is trying to mentor these fatherless young men. They were all once little boys who went to them and said, let me take you to Sunday school to learn the commandment, thou shalt not kill. Okay. This one here says, Levin, Watch FNM's blame the PLP for all this violence because of drugs, even though many of them benefited too. Then the FNM had 20 years to correct. Leave and understand, if you legalize drugs, 95% of the police would not get promoted quickly. White politicians need something to campaign on. Well, that is an interesting position, Vian. I mean,
it is true that the so-called drug, the military complex, which is known as drug interdiction in this country, will have to be brought back. But then there is a peace dividend in that. That peace dividend can be, you can transfer them from so-called, you know, arresting people on the street and that kind of activity to the social side
social
of things.
Social policing, yeah.
The social policing.
Yeah.
Not the kind of policing which involves pulling up with military-style precision, with guns at your side. And it's right now we have militarized even our police force supposedly in aid of the so-called drug war. It's all a big joke. Mm. And it's so transparent.
Text right here says, just to start, your guess is absolutely correct about the legalization. If you take a basketball away from the ball players, can they still play ball? The truth is, there are many plant or man-made chemicals that can be created to get high. And this is an arms race that government cannot keep up with. Drugs are not bad. Just ask your doctor. And also, Google the Rat Pack experiment by Dr. Bruce Alexander. Text right here says, I was listening to your intro and the question you posed, and my mind went back to the introduction of the Mortal Kombat video game. We had sons at that time who thought that it was better than sliced bread. So my husband and I decided to investigate this phenomenon. And what we saw was the training in the privacy of their own homes. Think about this, sir. I have a friend who was accepted into aviation school based on the hours he has completed in simulation flying. What's the difference between a simulation shooting and flying personnel and flying? I say none. I say they have become desensitized to killing, mask in the form of recreation. It's not the killing. And I do know that they've used video games to desensitize people to killing. What is the name of the video game? I don't remember. One of them. But we know that they made that to train soldiers with, because soldiers were having a difficulty pulling the trigger in war because they only... So they made a simulation game that then relaxed the mind to a point that they could actually shoot at human-like shapes, which is why they now make the target like the shape of a human. You know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
It made for better for, but again, it goes back to my point. Someone had to calculate that. That had to be put into a national defense budget, right? Because the target didn't make itself, and someone had to decide that we are going to now make targets in the silhouette of men. Where are people on the street getting that kind of money from?
Yes,
that's my question.
Yes.
Let's take a phone call. Good morning, caller. You're on.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. Thank you, sir. I always, when I hear these things that we may not think of or things that have happened, I always think that we were forewarned, you know. Bible, okay, it tells you this stuff to happen, but it didn't tell you when.
Mm.
You know, last and evil day stuff.
Mm.
You know, the child becomes wiser, but he cares more about life and especially the righteous part of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we give our kids all kind of gifts, okay, and they are upskill gifts. Things that we call it a modernized,
mm-hmm.
Okay, and then killing is the final thing, okay, and man, that is so sad. You know, whatever took place yesterday, and the cause of it, I had a premonition about we got a minister of national security.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it was told us that he is egregious. Okay, one bad example. Okay, and then we go down to a commissioner of police that cannot take from a Baptist minister. Okay, all I'm trying to say is that the kids see all of this stuff, and the same is evil is permeating inside the air, and that is let loose, but it cannot defeat righteousness.
Mm.
You see,
mm-hmm.
It's just last day stuff, God is still in control. This stuff can happen.
But man has to have a plan. When, even though God is in control, Cole, I always like to tell people, God can be in control, man has to have a plan. Because, you know, if my theology is correct, the hands of God are the hands of man. Mm-hmm. He operates in the earth through man. So in all of your premonition about what God will do, man must legislate, man must regulate, and man must participate. All right, I want to read this to you, Faye. I dug it up, and I, you know, you have to excuse me.
No.
Yeah. But ambushes. The aim of an ambush is to attack by surprise, by laying in wait upon a moving temporarily or temporarily halted enemy. Types of ambush: deliberate ambushes and immediate ambushes. Listen to the definition. A deliberate ambush. A deliberate ambush is one planned and executed as a separate operation. There requires to be time allocated for planning, preparations, mm-hmm. briefings, and rehearsals. Immediate ambushes. And it takes effect on previous training. It is set with the minimum of planning to take advantage of the information received on an enemy contact by a patrol. In an immediate ambush, there is no time for rehearsal and briefing will be minimum. What I saw yesterday
was an immediate ambush.
Was a deliberate ambush.
A deliberate ambush, okay.
Yeah, we practiced this.
Yes, planned.
We practiced the, I mean, think about the area.
Yeah.
If you go to west, you're going to be in Palmdale.
Yes.
You don't want to go that way.
No.
If you go north, you run into the dead ends of Camp Road. You don't want to go that way. If you go south, you're in Wolf Road, and there are two police stations that you have to get past.
Yeah.
The best way to go will be east.
Towards Camp Road.
Great. So now we need to know which side of this light stays on the longest. Which side of it is? It requires a level of precision. It goes on to say concealment. What is concealment? To avoid leaving tracks in the ambush area, especially on likely enemy approaches and in the killing ground. Do not cut away vegetation or alter your position with fire, as that may give away your position. Each man's camouflage must be of the highest standard. There are fully functioning businesses
in all areas,
on all sides of that corner.
The washing machine.
And no one detected that there were men sitting in wait with high-powered weapons. Imagine that. Imagine how much concealment effort that must take.
Mm-hmm.
Because high-powered weapons, they protrude. So there is very little way to hide them in a... I think I heard the commissioner of police say this morning that they were in a Kia vehicle. Well, all of them that I know are pretty small. So you got four men in a Kia with high-powered weapons, possibly ready to scheme ass up, but they're able to conceal themselves in a way that in a business area, they can move undetected. That is a level of precision. That is why I know that you've been behind this prohibition that leads to the underground economy that funds this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is now, outside of chickens coming home to roost, has that economy grown so big that they could now march beside the level of training that we, as a state, pay to protect the peace and civility of our country?
But what observations have been made by recent State Department reports and also even commissioners of police when they've done their analysis? These fellows have become... Over the years, the body of information and training has become more sophisticated. I'm sure they could find some big island somewhere to practice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they could find some secure place to use their weaponry to put themselves in a position to know how to execute. This was done. I agree, in military style.
Mm-hmm.
But for the young lady and the child,
mm-hmm.
it was almost done with precision.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
That being the case, it even caused even more so for some amendments, some correction as regards to the direction in which this country is going when it comes to the so-called drug war. It shows that it's making no sense. I mean, all of the commissioner's offices, every last one of them, down to the junior council, everybody's wearing a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's walking around looking like some soldier in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
It is a nonsense to continue. I'm arming the police force when clearly there's no connection between policing and the incidents or the incidences of drug possession, illegal drug activity, and the homicides. Homicides.
Mm-hmm.
It is unpoliceable. Not because of the police are bad people, but because the police are designed for investigation and ultimately prosecution,
mm-hmm.
not for prevention of crime, this kind of crime.
Mm-hmm.
It is not susceptible to that kind of policing. And again, I say nothing new, because even the commissioner of police who may be listening knows this to be a fact.
Mm-hmm.
But policymakers see it as politically expedient to continue the lie.
i.e. that somehow every year we talk about more cars, more this, more that, and that means we'll be fighting crime. That's a nonsense. Mm. That's a nonsense, and it's unfair to put the police in that position. The only thing they can do is get some kind of intelligence to allow them to arrest those four men, whoever they may be. Mm-hmm. And I hope they can do that very quickly.
The commission has promised an all-out manhunt.
But let not this all-out manhunt result in young, innocent men being arrested and harassed on the streets. Mm-hmm. This is what happens when the drug war is fought to its illogical conclusion. Unintended consequences occur.
Mm.
And for example, increased and stops and search. Of people on the streets, et cetera, et cetera. Our civil liberties.
Our civil liberties,
the intrusion upon telephones, and our security, our privacy. This is what has happened because of the starting of this errant drug war of which I was a part and for which I was responsible in having a number of young men go to prison. Now, I plead the fifth. I plead my involvement.
Mm-hmm.
But because I have had, because I have actually looked at this and I've recognized the role that I played was counterproductive.
This was as a former magistrate.
Absolutely. Right. I have to admit that it was the biggest mistake of my life. Mm-hmm. I should never have been part of that system. Mm-hmm. And to continue that system today, knowing full well that this whole thing has nothing to do with the interdiction of crime, it's more political than anything else. To the maintenance of the system which is crumbling before our very eyes. You can't protect our people. We have to come to terms with the reality that alcohol has to be legalized, as the Americans did in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. And Colorado was done just last year. You have to come to terms with the fact that the Portuguese have said legalize everything.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? All things return to normal. Now, just real quick, I want to make this thought too before you come back at me. All studies have also shown that after legalization regimes have been put in place, there is no uptick in the incidence of crime.
Mm.
There's no uptick. There's no, as it were, gateway reaction. That is to say, persons abuse more once this is done.
Mm-hmm.
The studies are in.
Yeah.
The science is in.
Yeah.
You know why I'm happy sitting here talking to you? Because I'm able to say that don't rely on what Fane Thompson says. Ladies and gentlemen, do your own research.
Mm.
Force your members of parliament, speak to them and say, listen, what happened yesterday in Jerome Avenue happened in Fox Hill. And it's been happening 1-1-1-1-1 to various young men in the streets for a while. Stop it. It's easy to stop it. I'm saying that we can stop it overnight. Overnight.
Prohibition.
Overnight.
Text right here says, Fane Thompson, Levin Miller, you said you were frightened and highly distressed with the seeming military-style precision killing. Could this seemingly high-trained killers perhaps be trained ex-police and defense force? I mean, it is quite possible, and nothing is outside of the realm of reason. Mr. Miller, they need to check all outgoing phone calls from that station where those men were released. Good morning. Careful, sir. I sense admiration for the skills of the gunman in your words. Well, they trained me to kill. I apologize. I enjoy the art of killing.
Being trained to kill, you mean?
Yeah.
You don't enjoy the art of killing.
Well,
I don't think you enjoy
killing
that.
Killing is an art.
Where were you yesterday at 5 o'clock, Levon? Levon, I'm messing with you.
Well, you can check my GPS because I track my locations daily.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if the police ever take me into custody,
I'm only messing.
Yeah, but no, Fane Thompson. And I think it is something that is really, really something that we have to address, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously, we look at it from two different sides of the spectrum.
We do.
I don't know if I will ever onslaught say, let us legalize the entire thing. I do believe that there is some good to be had from the reclassification. You think that doesn't reach far
enough. But reclassification and legalization is the same thing.
Yeah.
Because you make the particular activity lawful.
Right.
So it's legalization.
Right.
So you are talking the same language.
What I am trying to do, though, is hold off the oligarchical mercantile class.
I get you.
What I'm doing
the
in football is
response.
Right. I'm trying to do in football what they would call the stiff arm, right?
I get you.
Because that would be the only way to hold them off. And the men that have bore the burden of the weight of the drug trade will not benefit from it. Finn, we're out of time. I hear my music in the background. Thank you so much for coming.
It's been a pleasure, Levon. Thank you very much for having me.
I appreciate you for coming. But you know, I say it every Friday. It is Friday. Do everything in your power, man, to make sure that you don't kill nobody. Greater than that. More important than that. Man, do it. And we'll be back here on Monday, and you can join me. I'm going out today to Richie Spice. The streets are getting hot, Fane Thompson. Mm-hmm. And the youths, they're getting cold. Yeah. Levin Miller, this is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. It's your station for fresh news and smart talk. Don't move. They've got the news, and it's next.
Now tell me why the big guys are making so expensive for we. Give them the key or set them free. In the streets it's getting hot, and the youths don't like it.